You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Today we're going plant-based. There's been a huge, real buzz around the vegan movement for the last few years, and this year's Veganuary broke all-time records. Eco-conscious and ethical consumers are looking to eat more sustainably, and one man helping us to do that in the UK is Derek Sarno, co-founder of Wicked Healthy and executive chef and director of plant-based innovation at Tesco. Derek, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Steph. Thank you for having me on, you guys. Appreciate
Excellent.
It.
What did you have for breakfast today?
Coffee.
Coffee, and that's it.
That's pretty much what I have.
Clean and serene.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes I'm sitting by this computer so much with lockdown that I don't eat as well as I probably should be. And I probably shouldn't say that, but I do. You know, I drink coffee in the morning, and if I can, I'll get up and make some quick lunch or midday, you know, 11 o'clock or so.
Yeah. Now let's have I know that we a lot of people have talked to you about the past. You've been on quite a journey to get to where you are today. But could you anyway just give us a brief tour of the highs and lows that you've experienced along the way?
The highs and I mean, how far do you want to go back?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in the lows. You know.
Yeah, that's everybody is. I mean, briefly, like before I started, I used to work at Whole Foods Market as the global chef for the company there for 6 years. And I was pioneering like a lot of the plant-based stuff with my brother. We helped do their whole healthy eating initiative called Health Starts Here. And before that, you know, stepping even further back, I lived in a Tibetan Buddhist monastery and was there for 3 years. And that's where I really started to hone how to cook more greens, grains, and beans, and just more healthier approach, more of the vegetarian, vegan style. Before that, I owned three different restaurants. Two of them were catering companies, really big at the time. Like we expanded all over New England and catered a lot of different things. And then I also had a farm. I did a 2-year stint where I emulated a farm. So I did a vegan organic farm with my brother, Chad. That's where I started getting into the growing and not needing animals for growing. So I'm totally jumping all over.
I like it.
And the reason why I went to the monastery was because my fiance, 3 years, she was killed in a car accident and it really threw me for a loop. Like it was
wow.
It was a horrible, horrible thing to happen. And I had to really get my head on straight. I couldn't work. I didn't understand what life was about. Before that, I was all selfish, all ego, all about just cooking food that tasted good, didn't care what was in it, didn't care how it came about. And that all changed when I went to the monastery and after Amanda had passed. So that's where the journey started. So that was 15 years ago. And this past 15 years has really shaped up I've shaped up so to really just drive a mission as far as helping to end animal suffering, because I don't believe that anything should suffer for us to enjoy an indulgent life.
Wow, that is quite an extraordinary journey, and I guess some spectacular lows to some extraordinary high times as well. So now you became director of plant-based innovation at Tesco. That is a very, very different company to Tesco, I would imagine. I mean, it's vast. It's very corporate. Why Tesco?
Well, Tesco is the largest in the UK, yeah? So the resources that they provide me to get this done is just beyond none. I don't know of any better retailer out there. And I've worked and studied a lot of them, but I really do appreciate the size and the way the organization is run. I have so much respect for the CEO team. That's pretty much why I'm here, for the resources and to really expand out and get the word out faster to the mainstream.
Hmm. Now, I mean, some of the products that you produce in Tesco's are absolutely extraordinary. They're absolutely fantastic. But I wonder who needed who most, because Tesco really needed to shift. It needed to move on its feet. It needed to get a big foothold in the plant-based market. So yeah, who was the suitor in the combination, the relationship between you?
So when Tesco approached me, I had been taking a year off from Whole Foods, so I just had ended my career at Whole Foods, and I went vegan the next day.
And so that year off, during that year off, I learned photography. I raised two baby squirrels in my house. I learned how to bake sourdough bread.
The ninja squirrels.
Yeah, the ninja squirrels, exactly. Mm-hmm. I wrote the Wicked Healthy Cookbook with my brother Chad, and we started Good Catch Foods during that time. Also, Tesco had called, so they were looking for somebody to really inject a little bit of newness and innovation, and they were calling on me, and I said, look, I will come and cook and show you what I can do, but I don't want to cook animals anymore. So when they, Jason Terry had brought me over, and I met with the CEO team with Dave Lewis and a couple others, and we went around the stores. And I just, if you look around the stores, you know, if you just, it was only 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, everything is just a sea of brown. So all the ready meals were just brown. All the sandwiches were just brown. There was no vibrant colors of like vegetables. So my whole mission was to just really drive something to eat for myself personally, because there was nothing vegan other than a falafel wrap. Yeah. Nothing colorful, nothing stood out on the shelf. Everything was an animal product. And that's, you know, what I did was I've just put together a proposal. They had asked, we had long conversations. It took a while. It took months and months. And then they just brought me over to get it done.
Mm. And were you in the US at the time?
I was in Portland, Oregon, which was, if you've ever been out there, it's probably some of the most amazing food and fertile soil. Mm. It's just amazing out
there. I've heard it's a fantastic place to be.
Yeah, I do love it out there.
Yeah. Now, veganism, let's have a quick think about veganism. Now, vegans have been around forever, but the vegan lifestyle is just picking up speed at the moment. Veganuary reported the biggest year ever this year. But is it, you know, it's been around as a sort of a relatively fringe concept. It almost feels like it's got the power, such an extraordinary power behind it, that it's almost a fad, but I feel it's more than that. Why now? Why is the vegan lifestyle just taking over so powerfully now?
That's a great question. I'd have to attribute a lot of it to social media and just people really sharing ideas and what's going on. It really has expanded a lot of stuff, not just veganism, you know, but it's a good platform to really, anybody can show what they're doing, and you just have more access into it. You know, my brother has been vegan for a lifetime, as far as I'm concerned. And I used to make fun of him for it, you know, as a chef. until it's funny, people call it veganism. I just think it's more of a journey into compassion, into really, what are we doing? What are we doing to our food? What are we putting in our mouth? It's like, that's my whole big thing is it's, I don't necessarily want to be called a vegan. I just want to be known as a compassionate person and trying as hard as I can.
Yeah. Just, but again, these issues, you know, the ecological issues have been around. We have been aware of them for decades, but it seems as though it just took so long for things to pick up speed. Do you think there has been a moment in time, or is it the growth of social media and the potential for people sharing ideas, which was outside the mainstream of the food industry discussions, which were dominated by the food industry, the big companies? And is it handing over the power to people to being able to chat about things themselves and giving them their own, you know, method of broadcast? Is that what shifted things?
Yeah, I mean, I feel so. As so, you know, if you remember growing, I don't know how old you are, Steph, but
very elderly.
If I remember growing up, I didn't have computers in high school, you know, so that we didn't have all this information where we have available now, as we did back then. Life seemed a little bit different than it does now. You know, I honestly don't know what the whole tipping point was, but I do attribute a lot of it to socials.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking at what you're doing at Tesco, the plant-based range is a huge success there. What is your ultimate goal with it? What's next?
You know, just my ultimate mission, me and my brother and Wicked, is just to help end animal suffering. You know, if we can start with factory farms and really reducing that mass killing of animals to fit into the food system, then I'll consider my job done well. You know, I really want people to eat healthier, but healthier, I think, is everybody's individual choice, and they have to do it on their own, because, you know, you say health to one person, and they think it means something, and whereas it means something else to somebody else. It's just such a varied topic to go off after. So it's not about health for me. It's just more about compassion in our food system and building. I would really love to see and help build a parallel food system. You know, if you look at animal agriculture, the way it's done now, I believe we can do it totally sustainable with a plant-based one, including mushrooms and vegetables being center of the plate and also plant-based alternatives.
We've talked a lot on this podcast about how to achieve fundamental change in the approach. Is there a balance between health, sustainability and issues like this? And a lot of people have suggested really big fundamental changes in regulation, in getting big food companies to take a financial responsibility for bad health outcomes and things like that. Do you think that an approach on a broad scale like legislation and regulation is useful, or is it really about getting people to eat, making good food taste better, making it more exciting, and doing it in an individual way rather than a societal way?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. I don't know how to answer that one. I know that as a person, individual, I have control over what I put in my mouth. And if I have the skills to cook and prepare it healthy, then I can do that. A lot of individuals don't. So they rely on companies to make their food, and whether it's their responsibility to make it healthy, I don't know. I don't think it falls on a retailer or any one company to make a food healthy, because A, I love eating ice cream and I know that's not healthy for me, right? Mm-hmm. But I also love eating vegetables and I love the produce department and go in and I know how to cook my own food. So I know how to not add salt or not add oil or not add sugar to something, you know? So I know those skills. I don't know where the responsibility falls. I think it's a combination of both. I think legislation and government has a role to play in as far as not, you know, as far as really truing up the food system and realizing, you know, there's enough scientific studies out there that dairy and animal products aren't good for us and we shouldn't be eating as much as we do of them, if any at all. So, you know, that's my whole take on it. I think the government needs to step in and stop subsidizing animal agriculture and more, you know, I love farmers, I support farmers, but I want farmers to grow vegetables and mushrooms.
You're a big mushroom fan. We'll come on to the mushrooms in a bit. we were recently joined by Chris Kerr, your business partner in the States, to talk about the Good Catch Alternative Fish Company. It's a great podcast. Have a listen if you get a chance. But what excites you most about the alternative protein market?
It really offers something that is very similar to meat products. You know, I was a huge meat eater, a huge cooker of animals before. And so what I've found is like, it's all habit based. So if I can eat a burger that's just as good, whether it's a Wicked Burger or whether it's Beyond Burger or an Impossible Burger, I am totally satisfied. And it ticks all the boxes for environment. And as far as I'm concerned, it's healthier than any animal product because it doesn't require killing anything. So there's that sense as far as really satisfying what's familiar in a habit, you know, to help break a habit.
And when you say it's familiar, do you think that that's a stepping stone? You know, is it a stage that people are going to go through on the way to veganism?
Yeah, I do believe that is true, because I just watched how I did it, you know, over the past 10 years. You know, when I went vegan, I was like, okay, if I'm not going to eat animals, I need to learn how to A, eat something that satisfies me texturally, flavor wise. And also I wanted to be cool. I didn't want to be the odd man out. So
that's a really important aspect of it. You're absolutely right.
It is. I mean, if you know, I'm just trying to be authentic and honest about it. So it's like, that's how I made the mushrooms the way I do. So to make a mushroom steak look as sexy, smell as sexy, like taste delicious, and to be able to perform the way I like to cook, you know, grilling and searing and hot pans and knives, it works.
You want to raw when you cook.
It works. I didn't want to give up my lifestyle, but I just wanted to improve it. And this is how I'm ended up.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, you know, using words like sexy and saying that you want to, you know, that cool is important. I think so much of that is ironed out when people talk about good food and healthy food, you know, that these issues are really, really important. But I think what's interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't, at the moment, the food in Tesco's that you work on has all been plant-based and hasn't used alternative protein yet. Is this a stage further down the line for
well Yeah, we have. So we're slowly starting to introduce it into the Wicked range, and we also have the Plant Chef range too. So I help develop both. Well, I own Wicked, but I help develop both, and I have no problems with adding a little bit of the plant-based alternatives into it. If you look at it, just so one thing I did learn from Whole Foods is like the way that you treat animal products is as a condiment instead of the main item centerpiece. Yeah. So if you treat that the same as plant-based proteins, you're not going to have a problem. Mm. You know, people are always complaining they're pinpointing one product, like just pick any plant-based alternative, like a burger. And they'll be like, that's not healthy. Well, what's not healthy is killing an animal to create a burger. That's not healthy. To create one out of plants, whether it's from protein isolates or whatnot, is much healthier. It's still healthier for me. It's healthier on the environment. And we're not saying don't eat vegetables. Like, you can't just eat one thing all the time. So you can't focus on one thing solely being the cause of unhealthy or healthy. Mm-hmm. A produce department out there, and just people have gotten too lazy to go and find it. That's the health food store. In every grocery store is the raw vegetables.
Yeah.
Use them, you know.
Get on it. Yeah. Now, I mean, it would be obtuse of me to not mention that there are skeptics about in vitro meat and alternative meat, ready meals, that there might be a sort of a halo effect, but that they still contribute to climate change in the production process. Maybe they're not as healthy as perceived. What's your view? Does this matter? Is it just part of a journey that we're on, or is there some truth in that?
Well, I think everything matters, and it is a journey we're on. I would still put it up against any animal agriculture system that's going on. I still think any plant-based alternative is healthier than that.
Hmm. Okay, that's fair enough. Do you think there's a tie-in to personalized nutrition with, because what you're doing is something new. People are generally beginning to change their diet, although not everyone's vegan who eats plant-based food. But is there a time, as people change their nutritional balance, how do people control that and make sure it's right for them? Do you think that there is a tie-in to personalized nutrition with what you're doing?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question either, Steph. I mean, you know... I think it's everybody's on their own journey and they have to figure out what's right for them. I just think we need to start including compassion into our food as well as sustainability. All that stuff needs to be considered. You know, we're very moralistic beings. We're human beings. We have feelings. We know that our pets have feelings, and there's no difference from them than animals that are being raised for a livestock, you know, whatever that is. It's just, they all are beings. We don't need to be killing them. I'm just going to, that's all I'm going to say over and over.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's fair enough. But I wonder, is there some way, I've sort of toyed in my quiet moments about how to impress this upon people. Do you think that labels of food could have different sets of metrics on, you know, literally compassion metric, an ecological impact, amount out of 10, you know, a CO2 impact. Did you think that giving people the information and putting these things on labels might be useful?
I think so. I think that'd be amazing to do, kind of like the, you know, a friend of mine, Matthew Glover, he was telling me one day to do it like window ratings, you know, you can see from green to red, all the aspects, whether it's healthy for you, healthy for the environment. It'd be amazing to be able to label food like that and see how many food miles it was, where it came from.
Yeah.
It's cool stuff, you know.
Yeah. And once you give people the information, then they can start making a decision on these things. Now mushrooms. Let's go back to mushrooms. Here's a question for you. If the whole world's mushroom stock was suddenly and inexplicably eradicated, where would you look instead? What gives you that? What other culinary tool gives you what mushrooms can supply?
Yeah, look, mushrooms are one of my favorite things to cook with, because they're not really a plant. They kind of fall in the middle area. But I still find satisfaction out of every vegetable and just bringing vegetables to the center plate. You know, I haven't cooked with as many mushrooms this past like 3 months as I have in the past 3 years. But, you know, just for being in lockdown and not having access to them and going shopping all the time. But I still think there's plenty out there that we don't need mushrooms. You know, all these cool things that Beyond Meat and Impossible are doing with, you know, those aren't mushroom based.
Seaweed and algae. There's a lot to offer from lots of different things.
Yeah, there's so many things. What I like mushrooms for is I can create something meaty from their whole texture. I don't need to break them down or pull any isolates out. I can just do them as a whole veg. So I really like to practice with whole veg, like center of the plate items. You know, whether it's butternut squash and sweet potato, anything like that, I can do it with that as well.
Yeah. Now, I believe you've got plans to launch Wicked Foods internationally. And I wonder, the UK was your initial launch. Why was that? And how does that guide your approach to expand?
The UK is an amazing place to test food because, one, you know, you have one manufacturer that can reach the whole country. And that is very, very good as far as testing out concepts and rolling out food. Whereas, you know, the US, you need at least four or five in different regions, because if you want to do any kind of fresh food program, you're never going to be able to do it in the US unless you have that many spots, you know. So the smaller countries is easier. And then also Tesco being like having just an amazing process, and their supplier base is just incredible. The people I get to work with are incredible. I'm super grateful for the position I'm in to be able to test all these things. And then all the support I get is just really amazing. You know, I don't know what else to say about that stuff.
Okay. In which case, the other question then really is, where next and what next?
Yeah, we are. I mean, we're definitely looking at the US. We're also looking at other countries around the European Union here. So, you know, stay tuned. I can't announce it right now. But we do have, so, you know, we are working actively, and I do expect it to be very soon that we announce something. So.
Excellent. Okay. Well, from unbearable tragedy that started this journey, really, to a huge positive impact on so many aspects of life and ecological situations and things like that. I think you've been really inspirational. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and you heard from Derek Sarno. Thank you so much, Derek. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food systems to GM crops and big data. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.